I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. The Israeli military said on Friday that one of the bodies released by Hamas did not belong to any of the hostages held in Gaza, accusing Hamas of violating an already shaky ceasefire. The military said two of the bodies were identified as infant Kafir Bibis and his four-year-old brother Ariel, while a third body that was supposed to be their mother Sherry was found not to match with any hostage and remain unidentified. The military said in a statement, "This is a violation of utmost severity by the Hamas terrorist organization, which is obliged under the agreement to return four deceased hostages." The family of hostage Oded Lifshitz said in a statement that his body had been formally identified. Palestinian militants handed over four black coffins in a carefully orchestrated public display as a crowd of Palestinians and dozens of armed Hamas militants watched. The purported remains of the boys, their mother, and Lifshitz were handed over under the Gaza ceasefire agreement reached last month with the backing of the U.S. and the mediation of Qatar and Egypt. A series of explosions Thursday on three parked buses has rattled central Israel in what authorities suspected was a militant attack. No injuries were reported. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
Police rushed forces to the scene in Bat Yam, a Tel Aviv suburb, as they searched for suspects. Bomb disposal searched buses and trains nationwide for additional bombs. A police spokesperson told local TV that explosives were found on two other buses. The mayor of Bat Yam says it's a miracle no one was hurt. He says the buses had finished their routes and were in a parking lot. I'm Haya Panjwani.
This is VOA News. A top White House official said Thursday that U.S. President Donald Trump's increasingly tough criticism of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reflects the administration's growing frustration with what they see as Zelensky creating roadblocks to finding an endgame to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
His frustration with President Zelensky is that you've heard is multifold.
For starters,
there needs to be a deep appreciation for what the American people, what the American taxpayer, what President Trump did in his first term.
And White House National Security Advisor Mike Waltz says Zelensky has not shown that. Instead,
some of the rhetoric coming out of Kyiv, frankly, and insults to President Trump were unacceptable.
It comes a day after Zelensky said the president's living in a Russian disinformation space, and the president called Zelensky a dictator. Asked if the president also sees Russia's Vladimir Putin the same way, Waltz did not respond, and also did not directly respond when asked which leader the president thinks is more responsible for the war. The rhetoric comes as Zelensky met with Trump Ukraine envoy Keith Kellogg. The news conference that was supposed to follow their talks was canceled, and Zelensky's spokesman says that was by U.S. request. Sagar Magani, Washington.
With European leaders scrambling to bolster their militaries amid doubts about the U.S. commitment to Europe's defense, Turkey, which boasts NATO's second-largest army, could be a key part of Europe's plans, especially in any peacekeeping operation in Ukraine. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky used a visit to Turkey on Tuesday to emphasize the importance of Ukraine's allies deploying soldiers to guarantee any peace agreement reached with Russia. Zelensky said he had discussed the issue with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, but that it was too early to reveal the outcome of the talks. While Erdogan has close ties with Zelensky, the Turkish leader has also maintained good relations with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The importance of the Turkish army to European security could be on the rise, with the United States demanding that Europe take more responsibility for its own defense. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, February 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. imposes sanctions on a Rwandan government minister and a senior member of the M23 rebel group.
I don't think anybody in Rwanda should be sanctioned about the issue in the Congo. The issue in the Congo is a complex issue. There is a division between tribes. There is a government that is against its own people.
Sudan recalls its ambassador from Nairobi to protest Kenya hosting the RSF and its allies. We'll tell you why Zambia's opposition Tom's Alliance is urging the government to stop the introduction of new banknotes. The U.S. denies allegations that the United States Agency for International Development is funding Boko Haram in Nigeria.
We, I can assure you, have policies and procedures in place to ensure that any of our assistance funding, whether it comes from USAID, the Department of Defense, the State Department, is not diverted to a terrorist group like Boko Haram.
And European leaders pushed back against claims by President Trump that Ukraine started the war with Russia. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Treasury Department on Thursday imposed sanctions on a Rwandan government minister and a senior member of the M23 rebel group for their alleged role in the conflict in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC. A U.S. Treasury Department statement says Rwanda's Minister of State for Regional Integration, James Kabarewe, was being targeted because he is central to Rwanda's support for the M23 militant group that it said is responsible for human rights abuses in the DRC. Also sanctioned was Lawrence Kanyuka Kingston, an M23 and Congo River Alliance senior member and spokesperson, plus two of his companies registered in the United Kingdom and France. Jean-Paul Ruhusha is an expert in the conflict resolution and director of Congo Today. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that these sanctions will not help in resolving the conflict in Eastern DRC.
I don't think anybody in Rwanda should be sanctioned about the issue in the Congo. The issue in the Congo is a complex issue. There is a division between tribes. There is a government that is against its own people. There is a big thing called Bazarendo, who are killing and rooting the thing for the people, for the population, especially for the Batutsi and the Rwandan-speaking people who are Congolese, and they are just there taking their thing. I think to sanction Rwanda on this issue, it's a wrong move.
So what do you think this means as far as the United States and Rwanda relations are concerned?
I am very curious about that. Rwanda has been a member and a partner of the USA and for a long time. I don't know why now they are doing this. I think this is going to impact the relationship between Rwanda and the USA. But again, I believe if the investigative issue of Congo is between the Congolese themselves. There's nothing to do with Rwanda, and I think the U.S. should investigate to understand exactly what's going on.
But do you think this will impact the ongoing conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo?
If we have nothing to do with the conflict of Congo, because these are wrong people. The only one I saw is Kanyuki. Kanyuki is fighting for the right cause. Nothing we do, James, with nothing about, it will do nothing about Congo. The Congolese have their own issue. So the conflict won't stop, nothing will stop, just because of the sanction of James Kabarebe. James Kabarebe is Rwandese, he's not Congolese. What is it, the impact? It won't stop the conflict that is going on in South Kivu. It won't stop the conflict that is going on in Kinshasa. It won't stop the bad leadership that is happening in Kinshasa. And in every region of Congo. Not only that, even the division of the tribe, it will not stop it. James Kabarebe is a Rwandese. I think he has nothing to do with anything in Congo.
How about the alleged support of the Rwanda government to the M23 group?
Although I have not any evidence about the Rwanda supporting them, but even if they have been supporting them, whatever they have been doing, I don't see anything that will stop them to do what they are doing, because they are fighting for their rights. They are fighting for their refugees to come back to Congo. They are fighting for their right to live in Congo. They are fighting for their land to live there. All those things are the things that they are fighting for. What does it do with Rwanda? Therefore, the issue should be resolved. Actually, I should propose the solution. The solution should be that the President Tshisekedi of Congo should sit down with the MP3 people and the people who are in concern to sit down and to talk to resolve the issue diplomatically. Other than that, they have been showing him that they have been terminated. They have been taking the whole North Kivu. Now they're in South Kivu. And they are going in Katanga. Maybe they're going to march until Kinshasa.
Jean-Paul Ruhusha is an expert in conflict resolution in the DRC and the director of Congo Today. He spoke from Kampala, Uganda, with viewers Douglas Mpuga. Rwandan government spokesperson Yulaa Mankolo sent us a WhatsApp message saying sanctions are unjustified. The international community should support, not undermine, ongoing regional efforts towards a political solution. She went on to say that if sanctions could resolve conflict in eastern DRC, quote, we would have had peace in the region decades ago. A Sudanese political leader says lasting peace will only come to his country if the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, surrenders to the Sudanese army led by Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. This comes as Kenya is hosting this week a meeting of the RSF and its allies that would lead to the formation of a peace and unity government. The Kenyan government said hosting the groups was the first step towards supporting peace. The French news agency AFP reports that Sudan's army-backed government recalled its ambassador from Kenya on Thursday in protest. Hussein Shingara is the Foreign Affairs Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Sudan. He tells me that RSF wants to form a government in occupied territories to further divide Sudan.
Those people is being get paid by, you know, United Arab Emirates to host this conference or meeting. But actually, it's not going to be success because, as you see, the people themselves, if you look at them as individuals attending this meeting, most of them are criminals or people that didn't have a crime record, or that's people that are not involved in politics for a while. They just select some people there, try to represent, you know, the Sudan by the diversity of the country. Is one from east, one from west, whatever. Try to show that, you know, all the Sudanese, they are coming here to form another government. But I don't think any, you know, big country can recognize this government. So if you look at the even the Kenyan newspaper, they are not agreeing something like that is going to happen in their country.
Kenya says it is following its tradition of hosting peace conferences. And by hosting this, the paramilitary support forces, this is the first step to support peace efforts in Sudan. What do you say to that?
Yes, that's what they said. But this meeting is something different because those, they're coming to form another government, which is opposition government in the same area in Sudan, which is, they said that it's going to be as, you know, acting, performing in the area occupied by the RSF. I think is going to be look different than the other peace talk before between South and North Sudan. That's why it's, they said they have hosted many, many peace talks, but this is not a peace talk now. It's something different.
So how do you think, therefore, peace can come? The Sudan military, led by General Burhan, what is it doing to bring about peace?
The only peace going to come when those people who are carrying the weapons against the government, against the national Sudanese people, just to surrender. When there is any militia in the world that's fighting against the government, they have to surrender. There are not a group of people there, they've been unrecognized, and then they're fighting for their rights or all those things. No, those people, they went to Khartoum there, they went from house to house, they occupied it, they killed people in their houses, it's just kind of a patsy there, criminals, and stealing, you know, their goods and everything from the Sudanese people. Nobody will sit with kind of those people and then try to get, you know, talk in the peace and tell them that's okay, you're going to come and become, you know, part of the Sudanese government. That's why they have to surrender. That's the only peace is going to be.
Hussein Shingraya is the Foreign Affairs Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Sudan. He was speaking with us from the U.S. state of Maryland. The United States has firmly rejected allegations that the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, is funding Boko Haram and other terrorist groups in Nigeria. This follows an allegation made by a U.S. Congressman, Scott Perry, that USAID has been funding Boko Haram and other international terrorist organizations. A reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more.
The United States Ambassador to Nigeria, Richard Mills, rejected the accusations in a meeting with members of the Nigeria Governors Forum in Abuja. The ambassador stated that no credible evidence exists to support such claims.
We have labeled Boko Haram since 2013 a foreign terrorist organization, a designation that was designed to block Boko Haram from carrying out any asset transfers to the United States, allows us to arrest and seize members of Boko Haram, and allows us to cooperate in investigations with the Nigerian government.
He emphasized that the U.S. is fully committed to supporting Nigeria in its efforts to rid the country of Boko Haram and other terrorist groups.
We, I can assure you, have policies and procedures in place to ensure that USAID funding, any of our assistance funding, whether it comes from USAID, the Department of Defense, the State Department, is not diverted to a terrorist group like Boko Haram. There is absolutely no evidence that I have seen that that has occurred. And certainly if we ever had evidence presented to us that a program funding was being diverted to Boko Haram, we would immediately investigate, along with our Nigerian partners.
The U.S. ambassador's statement comes in response to claims made by U.S. Congressman Scott Perry during a hearing on February 13. Perry accused USAID of indirectly funding terrorist groups, including Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. He alleged that USAID's annual budget of $697 million, which includes cash payments to Islamic schools, might have been misused to finance extremist activities, including terrorist training camps. General Christopher Musa, Chief of Defense Staff and Head of Nigeria Armed Forces, in a recent interview, corroborated the allegations made by the U.S. congressman. Musa said, "It's been a cause of concern on how the Boko Haram organization has been able to sustain the operations that long."
During the surrendering exercise, we were able to see some of them with hard currencies, different denominations. Besides that, like I said, they have a lot of support coming from outside. Now, what we have done is that we have raised these observations. The Office of the National Security Advisor, the NFIU, the Central Bank, the NIA, the DSS have all moved into it. What we are also doing is that we've reached out to the international community on the importance to trace the funds.
He said if the movement of the money is tracked, it will help in bringing terrorist activities to a halt. There have been calls by some northern elders to temporarily suspend the services of NGOs pending a thorough investigation. Gideon Paramalam is an activist in the North Central, Northwestern and Northeastern regions of Nigeria. He called on authorities concerned to properly investigate the allegations.
There are international NGOs, but there are also local NGOs. And I think it's important to make that distinction. Those international NGOs that receive big-time money, I think it's good for them to account for whatever single funds that they have received in order to spend in Nigeria.
Nigeria has been battling insurgency and terrorism for over a decade, with the government committing enormous resources to counter terrorist operations, while also seeking international cooperation to curb the menace. This is VOA News from Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 21st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. In Zambia, the opposition Tones Alliance is urging the government to stop the introduction of new banknotes. Alliance spokesperson Sean Temple says the design focuses on the country's wildlife while neglecting the country's national heroes. Tambo tells me that the government did not consult the public before rolling out the new currency. The finance ministry says the printing money is a high security matter that cannot be handled through an open tender.
We have three bases for our objection. The first point is the fact that there was no wide consultation by the government to the citizenry with regard to the proposed introduction of the new currency, both in its design as well as the denominations.
The government is the government of Zambia. It is in charge of printing money. Does it have to consult the public before printing money or before designing money?
Yes, they have to. That currency is not going to be only used by government officials. That currency will be used by each and every citizen on a daily basis almost. So when we pick out a note from our wallets and we look at that note before we pass it over to whoever we want to buy goods or services from, we need to be pleased with what we see on the note. We need to be pleased. So the design is critical. The design is important to the masses. The design has to be something that is acceptable. Specifically, we are particularly disappointed with the fact that the government decided to remove all our previous presidents, all our previous leaders, all our previous, you know, freedom fighters from the currency, and instead replace all those people, not the individuals, you know, who contributed significantly to the building of this nation to where it is today. They were totally omitted, like zero representation on all the new notes. And instead, the government decided to put animals. We are not adverse to the inclusion of wildlife on the banknote, but they should be included, you know, to supplement or rather to complement the human beings which are there, the people who have contributed to this nation to where it is. We had Kenneth Kaunda, we had Frederick Chirua, we had Levi Mwanawasa, we had Rupia Banda, we had Michael Chirufya Sata, we had Edgar Chagwarungu, we had Mama Chikamoneka, we had Gray Zulu, all those notable individuals, you know.
It can be argued also that the animals you're talking about are also part of the Zambian nation, and they add on to the beauty, the natural beauty of the country.
As a matter of fact, yes, James. And in terms of the design of previous knots, even existing knots, you realize that there are animals there, but the animals are not put there in isolation. The animals are not put in the knots current and previous to the exclusion of human beings. They are put there to complement human beings.
Sean Tambo is the spokesperson for Zambia's opposition Tones Alliance. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The fallout from U.S. President Donald Trump's comments criticizing Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky continued on Thursday. Trump doubled down on his claim that Zelensky is a dictator because he has not held elections since the February 2022 Russian invasion. Viewers, congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has reactions from around the world.
New Russian attacks on the Ukrainian cities of Odessa and Kyiv Thursday, as Europe reacted to U.S. President Donald Trump's claims that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has not sought an end to the war and is a dictator for not holding elections. John Healy is the defense secretary for the United Kingdom.
3 years ago, one country illegally invaded another, and since then, the Ukrainians have been fighting for their freedom.
Some longtime allies noting a change in the U.S. security partnership. Sophie Primas is a spokesperson for the French government.
En quelque sorte, l'Europe.
Europe is realizing that it cannot delegate its security to other powers. The French government stands by Ukraine as it fights for its freedom, but also for our European security.
On Capitol Hill, Trump's claims about Ukraine have drawn strong criticism from congressional Democrats. Democratic Senator Chris Coons is a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
For President Trump to demand an election before achieving some sort of ceasefire or a just and lasting peace misunderstands or misrepresents who's the aggressor and who's the victim. President Putin of Russia has never been elected in a free and fair election.
Some Republican lawmakers also pushed back on claims that Ukraine started the war with Russia, but others have joined President Trump in calling for an election in Ukraine. Republican Senator Josh Hawley.
Our president is right that they haven't had elections in a long time, and they are basically under martial law. That's not good. When you claim to be defending democracy, they need to practice it.
And former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, current deputy chair of Russia's Security Council, wrote on X, "If you told me just 3 months ago that these were the words of the U.S. president, I would have laughed out loud." But one analyst told VOA Trump's criticism of Zelensky clearly repeats Russia's false claims about Ukraine. Liana Fix is Europe Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
We have to see this as a move by Donald Trump to undermine the legitimacy of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and in the worst case, as Trump advocating for Russia's position.
Zelensky met with U.S. envoy to Ukraine Keith Kellogg on Thursday in Kyiv, but a planned press conference was canceled at the request of the U.S. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Umale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the quarterfinals and semifinal draws for the CAF Champions League conducted by the Confederation of African Football on Thursday. Defending champions Al-Hakli of Egypt face Sudan's Al-Hilal in what promises to be a high-stake encounter. Al-Hakli, 12-time winners of the competition, are aiming to become the first club to claim the title 3 seasons in a row. Pyramid FC, the Egyptian side that has impressed with their attacking prowess, will face Moroccan giant AS FAR. Pyramids, with Croatian coach Krunoslav Jocic at the helm, scored 14 goals in the group stage, the joint highest star. While AS FAR, led by Portuguese coach Alexander Santos, went unbeaten during their group campaign. In another mouth-watering clash, South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns will take on Esperance Sportive de Tunis of Tunisia. Sundowns winners in 2016 are aiming to break their semi-final barrier, having failed to progress beyond that stage since their title win. Esperance, 4-time winners, topped their group and recently claimed the Tunisian Super Cup under Romanian coach Laurentiu Regircov. The other quarterfinal match will see MC Alger of Algeria, who conceded just 2 goals during the group stage, take on South Africa's Orlando Pirates. In table tennis news, Ugandan Joseph Sebatindira has successfully defended a world under 13 table tennis title with a 3-1 victory over Spain's Alexander Malov in Villarreal City, Portugal. This was during the 2025 WTT Youth Contender in the under 13 age cluster. Malov claimed the first set 11-4, with a young Ugandan fighting gallantly to win the remaining 3 sets. In athletics, 3-time Olympic 1,500 meters champion Faith Kipyegon and world 10-kilometer record holder Agnes Jibet Ngetich, all of Kenya, are among the star attractions at the 4th edition of the Sirikiwa Classic, the final goal meeting in this season's World Athletics Cross-Country Tour in Labo, Kenya, on the outskirts of Eldoret Town on Saturday. Kenya's Kipyegon, the 4-time world champion, will try to reclaim the title she ran away with during the 2023 edition. During that groundbreaking year, she also shattered the world 1,500 meters, the mile and 5,000 meters records en route to being crowned the world 1,500 meters and 5,000 meters champion. The 31-year-old will be the athlete to beat in the 10-kilometer senior women's race, which will see her go head-to-head against her compatriot in Gittich. And now to golf, where Kenyans are eagerly anticipating the magical Kenyan Open 2025, set to take place over the weekend. The event will run from February 20th to the 23rd at the Mutiiga Golf Club in Nairobi, and that
does it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that is it for this Friday, February 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Bate in Washington.